So we've got George Ivey from the Media Ratings Council, Alana Gombert from the IAB Tech Lab, and Chris Pizzurro from Canoe Ventures. So we this group sort of drives the world of standardization, and we've got a little bit of feedback there. This group drives the world of standardization, and we probably all of us talk to each other on a fairly frequent basis. But I want to structure this in such a way that we talk about it sort of in a linear manner. And I want to start with Alana. Firstly, Alana, you run at the Tech Lab. You run a lot of the standards that are not so much just about the interactive world anymore. They're about all of the world of digital. And as I like to say, everything is digital these days. Talk a little bit about what I see as the two worlds. You've got the video world and you've got the display world and the challenges and the standards that are going on in there.
Sure. So hi, Alana Gombert, Tech Lab. I have learned a lot from the group on this stage. I don't come from a TV background at all. I come from digital background and namely an exchange background. So I was part of building two exchanges. One was Right Media, one was AdMeld, and then AdX, we were acquired by Google. And so we have protocols within the Tech Lab, be it VAST, VPaid, OpenRTB, and they're all frameworks for delivery, right? And meeting Harold when I first joined the Tech Lab, I realized that we could use VAST in particular to be a framework for not only digital, but also for broadcast and cable in certain ways. And so we have a working group that Harold spearheaded and we talked about that spans not only digital, but cable, broadcast engineers, audio engineers, and the like. And we're all having one conversation about creating ad formats, data, metadata inserts, and audio standards. That all came from one conversation when I first joined the Tech Lab with Harold. So, you know, my priority for the year is figuring out how we create interoperability across all of the medium.
And, you know, it's interesting, so you talk about VAST, the video ad serving template, but you've also got the two main standards that I see in the display world, which are Lean and the Flex ad specs. So those are important, and we're going to hear about both Flex and Lean later on in the day. But can you talk a little bit about what those two standards are?
Sure. So Lean was a concept that was created in response to ad blocking, and it stands for Light Encrypted Ad Choice, which is a DAA ad choice program, ad choice supported, and then non-invasive, which is a very amorphous term. What does that mean? So we released a new ad portfolio last year. And it's now it's mostly for display, but in banner display and in video is part of it. And we're going from fixed units to responsive units. So the Flex piece of that is the responsive piece. We've also, we're sunsetting certain ad units, so pop-ups, autoplay video, yes, that is the most contentious one for obvious reasons. So we're still talking about that as how we put parameters around that. But in general, we're trying to avoid annoying ad experiences and not piss off consumers.
Mm-hmm. And we one of the things, firstly, just so everybody knows, and this is one of the things that that Guy pushes in a big way at Mesa conferences. If you've got questions, don't hesitate, raise your hand. We'll pay attention and respond. But standardization in our in sort of media in advertising especially happens in layers. And Don Dolcinos from EITER and I talk a lot about the fact that you start with identifying things. And Don and I will talk about on the panel later on with Jane about what content identification means. But if you start thinking about the layer of content identification, the assets that we're talking about in the industry, and then you talk about the transaction and the transactional work that the Tech Lab does, that sort of builds the first two layers of what we talk about. But the third layer ends up becoming certification. And I think that between the Tech Lab and the Media Ratings Council, we've got certifications that go on in terms of the transactional relationships, the certification of efforts that happen from a measurement standpoint. George, can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges and some of the best practices in measurement certification these days and sort of where the MRC is playing in a big way these days?
Sure. Yeah, so so Alana basically just laid out a layer that is sort of a standard and an interoperability considerations at a tech level, and the MRC sort of sits atop of that, looking at the measurement practices themselves, and we standardize measurement practices for all different types of media. So we're the people, for example, that wrote the viewability standard that's been catching so much attention. We're writing audience currency standards. We wrote the base standard for all the invalid detection and fraud mitigation that's going on through TAG and other organizations. So we're in the middle of standardizing those kind of practices. When you say best practices, that's a hard question to answer, because if you look across the media measurement space, everything we look at essentially is in a state of transition. Like, we went through a whole period in the media business where measurement didn't change much. We had meters to measure television and diaries, and we had, you know, radio diaries, and we had all kinds of things that we did for decades. And now if you look at practice at almost every organization that measures, it's changing in a very, very significant way. And in some cases, it's hard to even figure out what great practices are, because the way consumers are attacking media data, acquiring it, and multitasking and doing all the things that we all talk about every day that make measurement very complex, the measurement services themselves are having difficulty responding to that and keeping up with it. I'd say keeping up with it is probably the principal concern. So we're in the middle of that, trying to standardize it. We gather together huge working groups of people to help us practitioners do that. Some best practices that surround that are, like, one of them, for example, that's emerging in a hugely prominent way, and I'm not just saying that because Harold's sitting next to me, is asset identification. So building that into the transaction stream, it's all great when we were measuring television, we were measuring radio, and we were measuring print, we were doing this. That asset identification was important, but each of these media types had this stuff in their own silos. It grew up inside those silos, and what we found, not just in a nuanced way, but what's hit us between the eyes with a sledgehammer, is that you need something better than that to identify the content as it crosses through all the different ways consumers acquire it. You have to have that to identify the content, process the content, deduplicate the media behavior. So if Alana has a cell phone, and she has an iPad, she has a TV at home, and she's on a airplane where she sees content, she might see the same ad four times. Well, that's all great for frequency, but for reach, she should only count once. And how do you deduplicate that if you don't even know what assets are presented to her in a unified way? So that's one very solid practice that's been developing. Another very important practice is that these measurement companies are hugely expanding the data sets that they use to make conclusions about consumers. So is a meter panel good enough to measure TV anymore on a standalone basis? I think the answer is coming back pretty conclusively, no. You can't just go out and meter 25,000. Even if you can measure 50,000, 100,000 households, can you actually capture what they did on the Brazilian soccer channel yesterday? No, you can't. Doesn't work well. So they got to incorporate return path data. They have to have cheaper, more scalable measurement technologies. And every measurement service we work with is looking at incorporating large data sets into their processes. I could go on and on, but I'll stop.
And George, we're going to come back to you in a minute, because there's a whole other set of conversation I want to have with you. But I go over to Chris. So Chris Pizzura with Canoe Ventures. Chris, you're sort of less of a standards guy on this table and more of a sort of an end user. And I like to look at, and again, I've said this a couple of times, and if you remember, those of you who were here at Smart Content last year, I had a slide that went throughout the day that was everything is digital. And Chris is sort of the poster child for everything is digital. Chris sort of comes up from the world of cable television, where we had proprietary technologies and proprietary wires. And we're starting to see that going via internet protocol. And we're seeing a lot of the same standards. You know, I said this last year at Smart Content. We, you know, the cable world is using the video ad serving template, which is an interactive world standard. So what's changing in your world? What are you seeing? What's going on? And how does this world of standardization and interoperable systems impact you?
Yeah, lots changing. Actually, rule number one of entertainment, right? Never follow babies, pets, and George Ivy. Because now you just got to try to keep up. Always open with a joke. Other form of entertainment. Yeah, lots changing, Harold. Like you said, yes, we're an implementation group, right? And for years within cable, we were implementing what was Cable Lab specs and all those sorts of things. And for those of you that don't know, for Canoe, we currently run the back end for all programmers, cable broadcast, on inserting an ad on cable VOD. And we've traditionally done that and stood up that business really started with a finite set of tools in its own little world, basically our own campaign manager, our own ad decision engine, using Cable Labs in sort of a closed system. And we did that in order to help our programmers and our cable operators monetize this asset that previously was being unmonetized from an advertising point of view. So we've done that over the past few years, made a $1 billion business collectively for MSOs and programmers and advertisers. So, you know, check that box, good, that's great. Enter this world now, and there's a whole new thing. Good thing is we've always known this was coming. We've had different phases to what we've built, phase one, phase two, phase three. Now we're in what we call phase four, which we've always anticipated with our programmers, and that is literally now combining this closed-loop system and really opening it up to vast, essentially, is and we never had that as a pre-drawn conclusion 5 years ago, right? It was just, we know we are going to have to open this system up so that there is one ad asset that you can track and have frequency as it runs from tablet to mobile and into cable VOD. So we've sort of always known that was happening, and now we're just starting that implementation process in 2017, working with vendors like Freewheel and Google DFP, and working on VAST standards, and in cooperation with the MRC to make sure everything is meeting those standards. So we're on that, officially on that path in 2017. In fact, I just met with all my programmers last week, laid out the path. It's going to do, you know, this, and everyone pretty much nodded their head and said, yep, you know, looks like the plan is right. So now we're really going to start running with full implementation mode as we move into 2017.
And George, you've, you know, the last few weeks have been kind of a whirlwind for the Media Ratings Council in terms of announcements of companies that we never really, at least in my mind, I never really thought were going to be sort of serious candidates for certification. So talk a little bit about, you know, who, you know, some of the recent announcements, and what's driving this stuff, and where do you see the MRC in a few years, considering the importance and the centrality of the work you're doing?
I don't have a crystal ball, but I think we need more people, number one. But so there's been a confluence of events that have happened in that have impacted particularly one very large digital enterprise, Facebook, where they made some announcements related to situations they found in their data processing. And that really brought to a head the wishes that had been previously expressed by the Association of National Advertisers that some of these large digital enterprises be more transparent and open to auditing the accreditation process that we administer. And there's also a tremendous amount of investment in those platforms. They're huge. If you think about Google, YouTube, it's an enormous platform. And they're faced with very unique problems. So, you know, if you open up a YouTube video, they could have that video literally tagged for measurement by Moat, Double Verify, Nielsen, Comscore, Integral Ad Science, You know, they have 30 measures trying to tag their ads, and that could all be legitimate because their user base is so big, that user base wants to use multiple measurement assets and bring those to the table because we have kind of a free market system. And if you're Google, you don't want that to happen because you don't want it to take 20 minutes for a video to load for a consumer while all those tags are processing. So essentially what these large digital enterprises do is they restrict the use of tags in their tech. And what they have been doing for about a year and a half, again, responsive to industry pressure, is they've been creating the signaling data, the underlying data, and passing that to the third-party measures and saying, okay, go measure us. And everybody went away happy saying, well, we're measured by Moat, and we're measured by DoubleVerify, and we're measured, you know. But what really is the case is that's not end-to-end measurement. And that came to the surface in a loud way recently. And basically, the industry is asking those large enterprises to submit the creation of the underlying data that they give to these third-party measures to audit, to make sure that that data is accurate and that it's sufficient to create standards compliance compliant measurement.
So
that
so,
broke,
right?
And those organizations have been stepping forward to audit, and there's more of them, even beyond Google and Facebook.
And what's fascinating, I was watching a lot of the panel discussions and some of the keynote addresses from the IAB's annual leadership meeting, and that's the message that's coming down from above. You know, Mark Pritchard of Procter & Gamble talked about the fact that we have a broken measurement system, and we've got lots of murkiness and challenges. So I think, you know, seeing it come down from the top levels, and I think we're going to keep on hearing this message over and over again, that it's time for us to have some accountability.
Could I just interject thing? One other thing that he said that was really important is he said, we're facing a lot of complexity in the standards that people want to propagate and use. And it's a free country. You can trade, like if you're an ad agency, you can create whatever standard you want to create and trade on it. I only want to pay for somebody who watches my entire video commercial. And it's 100% viewable, whatever, all of that. You can pay for that. It would be pretty expensive, and the inventory is scarce in general. But what Mark said, which was very critical, is let's trade on a standard and try to agree on a standard. And that I think, was as important of a message.
Absolutely.
In the speech.
And Alana, the other piece of the world of the tech lab is not just creating standards, but certifying for standards as well. How's the standard certification work spinning up? Let's talk about that first, and then we'll come back to some other things.
Okay. All right. So for VAST and VPAID and EMRE, we now have a compliance program, and it's new. It launched last year. And it is part human and part tech. Tech lab, we have to have some scripts there to make it sexy. But we had our first certification partner last year, and Seismic just got certified in VPAID and VAST, which is great for us, one of the first big companies to be certified. And we're looking for this year to push this market in the US only rapidly. So we have a pipeline of about 40 companies right now looking to get certified in VPAID and VAST and EMRE, but it seems like video is more of a demand right now. And the process is pretty fast. It takes about 2 weeks at the most to get certified because it is mostly automated. If it's an enterprise certification, if it's a lot of installs of VAST, let's say it's a large video company, it'll take longer. But we're talking to our agency partners, and we're asking them to require it for vendors, because I think it's important that there's at least a baseline, to George's point, a framework and a baseline of a standard for folks to trade on, right? It's a currency, but the currency shouldn't change every 5 seconds, right? Be it viewability, be it VAST installations, and then everything is ID'd. So the ID comment that George made earlier, we're adding a supply chain protocol into our world. So we'll have asset IDs, which is ad ID. We'll also have principal IDs, so publishers, advertisers, agencies, and intermediary IDs as well. Because it's very complex to trade in this market. The intermediary folks can be up to 10 if there's arbitrage happening in the middle. be it a programmatic buy or even a direct buy if there is reselling happening. So it gets very confusing very fast. So transparency is key.
And Alana, and this is sort of for both Alana and for Chris. We're now a year into the release of VAST 4.0. Adoption, and I'll say this, adoption of VAST 4.0.
Adoption's awful.
Pitiful. What's stopping that? Firstly, let's talk about the things that VAST 4.0 brings to the industry. So talk, just for a minute, talk about the innovations that VAST 4.0 brings.
Sure. So three things that I'll call out. There's more, but the three things that are in my mind. SSAI, server-side ad insertion, is supported by VAST 4. There's a mezzanine file concept now for the very first time within VAST, which is important, obviously, for many reasons. Then the concept of an asset identifier is also in VAST. So ad ID can now be placed into the VAST protocol and be used appropriately. And people are upgrading. I'd love to hear your perspective on this. It just takes a while to upgrade, especially large installations. And we do have folks in the pipeline, but tell us.
early for us is it's stodgy old cable people. But what we're finding out of the gate as we, again, out of our closed loop system, now opening up ad decision engines from other companies that our programmers use. And in that, we need those things not only to talk to our hub, but also potentially to talk to each other over VAST. And early days, but already I'm sort of finding that things can be vastly different between one version of VAST and the other VAST.
Yes.
That's your quote for the day, if there's anyone who wants to tweet that out.
He's a your comedian, too.
Thank
know
you. In a non-prior life. So I think we're all sort of working through that we said it's a template. Yep. So I know at least that where we're at is at least getting those parties in the room and figuring out what that is. And we've done that in the past years in our implementations when we took the digital folks at FreeWheel and had them talk to our traditional cable guys. And for a couple weeks there, one guy was talking German, one guy was talking French, and the answer was in Russian or something, right? You know, people were kind of talking through each other. But eventually, everyone's smart, everyone's good, and eventually they figure out how to talk to each other. So we had that in phase three. So now in phase four, that's what we're seeing is sort of that situation again early. But again, really smart folks that I'm sure will work through that.
But you know, I'm gonna go back to Alana. Thank you for throwing out the pitiful quote, because you know Jared Wald, who's my AdID's director of technology and platforms, and I have been writing a paper on the use cases relating to VAST 4.0. And what we hear from people is they're not so sure that it's in their pipeline. They're not so sure that VAST 4.0 is in their future. They're still sitting on VAST 2.0. Some of them are sitting on proprietary ad serving templates that don't even use the VAST protocol. So what's gonna drive this?
Well, I think the working group that we put together, the cross-industry group, has been driving conversation a lot more than the past year. So we're getting a lot of phone calls now, and people are actually starting to upgrade for the first time, which is awesome. And I think having these chats and having these meetings between the cable folks and the broadcast folks and the audio folks and educating everyone on what VAST actually is and how to upgrade, because it's not backwards compatible. There's too many changes, right? So how do we do this in a way that makes sense? And I think holding people's hands is critical. The consulting piece of standards, at least from my perspective, from my company's perspective, hasn't really been a priority, but I think it needs to be, right? Because you can't just give someone a standard and say, go implement this, enjoy, right? That's not cool. So we're gonna start helping them upgrade and consult with them on how to do it.
Well, that's gonna be important, and I think we've gotta do a much better industry education job. We've gotta get some collaboration. And frankly, and Alana, you and I sit in meetings sometimes and we say, you know, we sort of look around the room and say, did you imagine years ago to have people from the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers, from the Audio Engineering Society, and from the IAB Tech Lab together? So there's progress being made. It's a question of how much and how quick. Okay, so we've got 1 minute left. We got a question for Mr. Donahue. Who's got the microphone? Okay, Garrett.
Check. I'm Mike Donahue. George, this is for you. One of the most confusing things for a lot of people in the space these days, and going back to Harold's point about education.
It's on.
It's on. Okay.
We can hear you.
is the fact that too many people can conflate viewability and actual time spent. And the point is, years ago, you certified at the whole served impression, years ago, 10, 15 years ago. Then you certified viewability. An ad has to be served if it has a chance to be seen. We now have the focus on chance to be seen. But that's not really enough. What has to happen is, how long does somebody stay with it? And digital is the only medium where you can measure, literally, how long somebody stays with the page where the ad is. How close are we to making that happen? And do you think that could become a big currency?
Yeah, well, how close? We're trying to bring a lot of groups together to accomplish just that. But first, let me say, your question is very important. It's sort of the cornerstone of the direction that we're heading in as an organization for cross-media and digital standardization. So we're on version 6 of a standard called the Digital Audience Metrics Standard. And basically what that standard is doing is taking a viewable impression as the qualifying moment to be included in an audience calculation. So, and that audience calculation, to be said simply, is something like an impression filtered for invalid traffic, delineated on the basis of duration, and also for within targeted audience characteristics. And it's going to be calculated as like a GRP. And because you have short form video and long form video and you want to differentiate the usage of this, we're noodling ways to do that. We've initially proposed something called a duration weighted GRP, which sits next to the GRP, where we're going to have duration weighted viewable impressions essentially as the input for that. So that not only will something be viewable, but it'll be delineated on the basis of how long it was viewable. So that's coming at the marketplace. And right now we have people that are trading on different viewability standards, maybe halfway through the video or 100% through the video. And when this standard is introduced, what it's going to do is sort of make all that, I hope, kind of irrelevant, because now we're creating a currency that's a viewable impression as a base with duration added to it of whatever the actual length is.
And you can't do that linear media.
Well, I mean, you have some linear media that has surrogates for that. Like, for example, if I'm watching TV today and I have a people meter, I punch when I'm in the audience and I'm supposed to punch when I leave the audience. And we've tested that for many, many years. And by and large, it works pretty well.
But not on duration.
It does work pretty well on duration. I know I'm in the audience. What doesn't happen in television is reporting discrete commercial duration. It's all delineated on the base of program, so.
I just want to say one thing, and George knows this, I hear him say this all the time. Digital is more ephemeral than TV, right? So Mark Pritchard, he made a comment, I don't think on stage, but maybe afterwards, and he said his ideal video is 3 seconds long, right? So you know, I think duration is really important, but we have to think about it in probably shorter time frames.
All right.
Well, Chris. That's the very reason why we're trying to look for something to differentiate short form video. All this stuff is coming together. And it's some of it's getting shorter as attention spans.
Chris gets the last word.
Chris, go
for it. Nice. And I'll be the contrarian of sorts that I just can't let it go. In that, yes, duration to an, I assume you're saying to an ad.
Yes.
Well, ad viewability?
In the context of content, sure.
Okay. When it comes to ad viewability, yes, important. Yes, it should be measured in a factor. Like there should be, yes, what's viewable first and far off, right? We need to know that and all that sort of stuff. Then yes, I would say there should be a second or an additional thing that talks about how long. And by the way, we can do that in cable VOD today, so that we are capable of doing it. I actually don't release that, and here's why. When the agency wants to pay extra for that, right? I don't, at my programmers don't make the ad. they're not engaged in making that ad. They're just broadcasts of the ad. So unless they are engaged in that ad process, they can't be held responsible for how long someone watches that ad. That's just not fair. If it's a piece of branded content, maybe an ad that they're involved with, then you should be measuring that because you're both invested. I certainly agree there should be an additional thing that if someone just wants to turn that on as terms of their agreement, like they agree, yes, you know, duration's important. But I just don't think it should be a foregone conclusion that that's just part of the deal. It should be an additional data point if people want it.
Okay. Thank you very much to my opening panel.